You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, I want to read something to you. I sent it to you, and I know you're an avid reader, and you probably have had a look at it, but I want to read it out. It says here, in the middle of the night, while most of the country was sleeping, the President of the United States was wide awake in a dimly lit room deep inside the White House, pulling relentlessly on social media for nearly 6 hours. When most presidents would have been resting ahead of another day at war, Donald Trump was instead flooding his personal platform with a stream of conspiracies, self-promotional imagery, and disjointed messages. Buried in the middle of all that was one post that triggered grave worldwide concern for what would come next. Over the course of the next 6 hours, the president posted nearly 46 times, pushing out conspiracy theories accusing Obama and his underlings of treason and sedition, images of himself meant to project power, and movie-like trailers meant to convince punters that putting America first is good for the world and that only he can solve any and all of our problems. And then, in the middle of it all, he shared a live performance of My Way by Frank Sinatra. And you probably know that one, David. It starts, and now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain, followed by, my friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain I did it my way. He didn't add any context or explanation, he just put it up there. I mean, the fact that he can complete 46, messages on his social platform. Truth Social. It's quite astonishing in the middle of the night for hours and hours on end.
Do you think he does it? I think all of this, he might go to sleep, but someone else is doing it for him. You know, it might be pre-recorded. I mean, it's insane that he's, that these come out that was so consistent, and why use that platform to put across your policies? It's astounding. I mean, now you understand why social media has such a large impact, because even the President of the United States does it, or so many people do it. You know, other politicians do it to get their message out. Whether this is where we've gone, I don't know. You know, I can't stand it. And there's nothing worse than spending your whole day just looking at your phone, and it drags you in.
Do you ever
get angry?
Do you ever get sent a message on a Monday morning that says, last week you averaged X amount of time on your phone?
Yes.
How many hours do you average? What would you say?
Because I'm using it like now, so it comes to about just 1.5 hours.
A day.
Which is, I mean, you know, it's not bad. I mean, because I use it as a phone.
Very good. I mean, mine's 5 hours a day.
It's your business. But I mean, I can't stand my phone.
No.
I've got a laptop, and I've got a desktop. I mean, I've got a big screen. So that's what I watch for most of the time. And I use emails and everything. But I can't stand looking at my phone and getting sucked into reels or into YouTube or into Instagram and whatever.
It can be very addictive indeed, and I can understand why young people, vulnerable people, can get firstly sucked into it because it's very enticing, and secondly start to believe some of the theories that are put across on these rather unpleasant unpleasant contributors to whatever platform it is. I can see why it happens, David, and it has a huge influence, and I think people like Zuckerberg realize it, and they really should be reined in. I've got a bit of a thing about Zuckerberg, you know that.
But you know, Lindsay, it's like our dear friend Julieta. She loves to battle on X. You know, she loves to take on everybody, and all you do is you get somebody who's probably got a low IQ, doesn't earn any income, has got plenty of time, sits back and insults, and just has a go because it gives him that power of following you or following people who've got followings, I said, why do you subject yourself to this absolute frenzy of attack? I just forget about it. I don't care. But you get so excited because some jerk has gone and attacked you and called you whatever they want to. And in many cases, they do it anonymously, you know, under what do you call it, a pseudonym or another name.
Yeah, nom de plume, whatever it is, yeah.
Nom de plume, whatever. Please. Anyway, that's, you know, that's where we are. I'm not going to change it.
Just going back to –
I don't like
– mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the reasons I wanted to read that introduction was because looking at Trump now and reading pieces like that about how much time he's spending, whether it's him or not, the fact is he's approving it, tells me that his mental state is deteriorating quite fast. Certainly physically, he looks awful. And he got off a helicopter yesterday and his tie was wrapped around his neck. The one half of the lower bit of the tie, the thinner bit, was going down where it should be, and the other bit had been blown in the wind. And he got off the aircraft, the helicopter, tried to do his button up of his suit jacket. Couldn't do that, so left it, stumbled a bit, and just walked off, and his tie was still around his neck. And he, I don't know, he's the president, David. I think something silly's going to happen.
You know what?
There's a chance.
Yeah. He's under pressure. I think this hasn't gone his way, and it's really testing him. You know, he thought it would be over in a week, and it just drags on. And I think the consequences of this war are so widespread now, causing, you know, lots of issues. I know the markets are complacent, and I'm glad about that. I think they're just moving beyond and getting back to focus on, you know, on fundamentals. But I mean, from a global point of view, there's just so much debris that has been left. It's quite worrying. And it's just, you know, it's shaken up everything. Everything is just like your alliances, NATO, Russia, China, who knows? And just, oil. I mean, the whole supply chain, everything is just a mess. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of solution. You know, this can go on. You know why, Lindsay? Because you can go into a dime store, whatever it is, you know, down the road, build yourself a drone, and drop things on, you know, on other people. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of effort. So you don't have to be a powerful nation to cause havoc, which is what the Iranians are doing.
It is extraordinary, drone warfare thing. I just read something today about Ukraine hitting Russian targets 500 kilometers away with these little drones. They can do nothing about it. You did some reading over the weekend. You always do some reading over the weekend. Yeah. What was it this weekend?
You know, I was trying to get some cohesive view of where we are and what the war means and how we get out of it. And this is not market. This is more from a political point of view.
Yeah.
And some of it may exist. So, you know, wherever you go, I think virtually every article is around the war, is around Trump, is around, I mean, there are massive attacks on him from every angle that it comes, you know, all the major publications. And there's very little complimentary. In fact, there's zero complimentary, nothing that he can hook onto. So, but I think I looked at it more from an objective point of view and said, okay, well, where are we now? And try to summarize it. And I think that what is, you know, one of the highlights is that you've got these choke points. I mean, which is now the Strait of Hormuz, which is you're fighting over this Strait of Hormuz, which has been there for a long time. This is nothing new.
Exactly. But I don't understand why the people are suddenly so surprised about it. It's a 22-mile waterway that sends out hundreds and hundreds of ships every month, and that's it. And why didn't Trump know this? Why didn't Trump work out that that is the only thing that they've got going for them? Some drones, a few missiles that they've got left, and, of course, the strait that they own. It's just ridiculous. What was the conclusion? What was the conclusion?
I also would have thought, the conclusion is that there's been no defense against this. In other words, there's no alternative. You know, I would have thought that if it was such a sensitive area, Saudi Arabia, all the other nations would have said, okay, you know, we've got to start maybe doing something through the Red Sea or maybe doing something through Europe. I mean, simply that on the other side of the strait is Iran.
Yeah.
And a massive border of Iran. You know, they can pick up, get on horseback or whatever they do and ride somewhere else and, you know, and launch missiles from there. Or, sorry, I should have said on a camel, you know, because it's desert or whatever they do. So it's surprising that these energy routes have not been protected and now are so vulnerable. You know, I think the other thing is what we've been talking about as well is just how AI is so powerful now. You know, it's that both armies, or I'm talking about mainly the U.S. Army, was yes. able to pinpoint with such precision, you know, their strikes. I mean, it's remarkable how important it is. You know, we spoke about the drones and missiles as well, and how you can get a rocket that you buy for Guy Fawkes and do an incredible amount of damage, you know, to ships or anybody. It doesn't a huge amount of effort to use drones and missiles to cause harm and weaken powers because they've got to kind of counteract it. So, I mean, all of these things are emerging. And I think the other thing is NATO. You know, I don't know where Europe is and NATO is now.
Why should they be anywhere? Why should they be anywhere?
No, I'm just saying that it's under strain, you know, and I'm merely commenting. I'm not saying yes or no.
I don't think NATO is under strain, actually. I think NATO has been strengthened with the Hungary election, with Orban getting kicked out and this new chap who's still on the right, but he's pro-NATO and therefore he'll be pro-Ukraine. So I think NATO is just sitting there watching Trump and saying, but you didn't tell us about this. You expect us to be able to mobilize equipment and soldiers just like that. We're not like you. We're not skin of the teeth stuff. You know, wake up in the morning and think, right, what's next? Ooh, I fancy Iran. Let's bomb them because that's what Trump does. How dare he say that NATO has let them down? A load of rubbish. It makes me mad. David?
No. I'm just saying they're strained. Their relationship with the U.S. is strained.
Yes.
You know, and from that point of view, I think the U.S. is still important for them. I don't know what's going to happen as a result of this. Europe's got to get together. It's got to get its act together and say, hold on a sec. You know, we can't trust the man. He's unpredictable. How are we going to combat this? You know, the remember the UK and the French still have nuclear armaments from the olden days. So they're still very powerful forces, but they've got to do something to try and strengthen Europe, you know, to come out of it against what might be a threat. I think the other one, of course, you have to look at the UAE, Qatar and all of that. It's incredibly vulnerable. And the last thing you want to do in these circumstances, have Iran with a nuclear bomb or nuclear capabilities. So, you know, it's another thing to think about. And I think this is why Trump is just acting the way he is. I think he's completely out of his depth. No, which is not, you know, I think he's out of a
depth. Okay, so what we can, given all the headlines that keep flashing on the screen, the finance minister of Iran says, we're not talking to America and we don't want to talk to America anymore. Trump tells the New York Post this afternoon that J.D. Vance is on his way to Pakistan for Iran talks. Now, who do you believe? Do you believe Trump or do you believe the Iran minister? I don't know. I tend to think that J.D. Vance is about as good as Jared Kushner and Witkoff. I mean, the two drippiest people that you could possibly send. I mean, what's his name?
They don't do anything.
Kushner stands there looking like a dead fish all the time with his black eyes. He looks like he's just got off the slab of a fishmonger. And Witkoff, I don't know. He's got his tackies on with his suit, and he just looks like a dodgy chap from East London or something. Not your East London, but my East London.
I know, from Billingsgate.
Precisely. Yeah, that's a good one.
I think, and why the markets are steady like they are at the moment. I think they're responding to both sides not wanting to take this ahead. They're making a lot of noise, but I don't think they want the rockets to fly again. They don't want a war to continue. And despite this, I think that they, I think they will bring an end to it. It'll drag on, but nothing will happen. You know, it'll be literally hitting each other with
so the markets just carry on. But what about the impact on inflation and what about the interest rate policy? So there's not going to be cuts. Yeah. There's not going to be cuts unless Trump forces the Fed to lower rates, which he can do with Walsh in charge. But we'll see. But anyway, I'm looking at my screen. If you look at your screen 8 months ago, Brent crude oil was trading at West Texas crude was trading at $57 a barrel. It's now $88 a barrel. Brent crude oil is now $94.55. And it's been there now for how many days has the war been going on? Is it nearly 5 weeks now? Or is it just four weeks? I can't remember.
It's nearly 6 weeks. It was the end of February.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And so that was March and all this was 6 weeks,
It'll start to filter through to prices, David. That's what I'm saying. At the moment, people are using up their stock and everything, and there's always a period of flatlining. But I think inflation is going to climb.
You know what?
In the next quarter.
It's going to hurt certain nations. And the more I look at America, you've got the rich and you've got the not so rich. And it's the not so rich that are going to feel it. The rich are not going to feel it. And they can handle it. So it makes headlines and it makes political headlines, but in essence, and the inflation rate will remain high because it's a basket. But does it impact Americans? Not really. Is it going to impact businesses? Not really. That's my point, and that's why the markets are doing what they're doing now. It's going to affect Apple. Is it going to affect Amazon? That's why those will continue, and I think that's why the markets are where they are. But certainly at the low end of the market for consumers who are very cost conscious. And watching their wallets, yes.
I wonder about SA Inc. I mean, everyone talking about SA Inc. at the beginning of the year and saying it's going to be the best year, had a good year last year, but it was very much led, the JSE, that is, was very much led by a narrow resource-based pack of shares that went shooting up. And so the indices went shooting up. But everyone said this year, SA Inc. is going to benefit from that. And then, of course, the war comes along. South Africa, terribly, terribly vulnerable, David, to the oil price. And to, I don't think Lesetha Kanyaga is going to raise rates, but he's not going to cut rates. No. And I do think people, credit retailers, are going to have a tough time.
Yeah, you're dead right. You know why? He initially, first of all, there's that fuel levy. Mm. So they subsidized the fuel price or the petrol price with a reduction of at least, I don't know, what, R3 per liter or something like that. They're going to have to reverse that. You know, they can't do that indefinitely. And the point is that the oil price, as long as these hostility or as long as the tensions last, are not going to do anything. You know, they're not going to go down to those levels that you spoke about because there are a lot of ships that are still stuck there that can't get their cargoes out. And it's causing all disruptions. So, yeah, we are vulnerable. I'm talking about, I think, Europe to a large extent as well.
Very much so.
And it could be China. It could be China as well. Huh? America, no. You know, I don't think America anywhere close to as but, being but
it's a sad situation, isn't it, when America it could be self-sufficient in oil. And if it cut itself off from the rest of the world, oil could be petrol could be $1.50 a gallon in America. But it's $4.50 a gallon because of the world markets, which is such a strange thing. Why isn't there a domestic oil market? Why don't they just trade with each other? No, of course they don't. And I don't get that. I'm not an economist. I really don't get it.
Oh, well, of course you can export. So why are you going to sell to your at a discount? You know, unless you're in a an authoritarian relation. I mean, a nation. Yeah, they can insist upon that. But I mean, otherwise, no, you want, you're a free nation, free trade. This is, you want the international price. So you pay the international prices.
I think I'm a socialist, David. I really think there should be a two-tier system. There's the oil companies in America that are producing oil in Louisiana, wherever it is, Texas, they should be forced to sell a certain amount to the consumer market at the level, and then a certain amount can be sold to the export market. Yeah, that's not Marxism. That's socialism. It's the Williams model. David, okay, so the market's going to be fine. The markets that you like are going to be fine because you're AI heavy.
Yeah.
And, good luck. Fantastic. Let's just don't try and anticipate a war scuppering a market that is being led by something that is not affected by the war. Yes. That's the key point here, I think.
I'm reflecting on what I see in front of me. You know, I'm commenting on saying, hold on a sec, you know, and as I talk to you now, the S&P is down,
0.1%. Yeah,
it's still in the 7,000s, you know. It only broke through there last week. Even the NASDAQ is down 0.3%. Yes, there's a little bit of a sell-off after the big gains that we saw. But Lindsay, there's another point, you know, and I try and get this across. It's very narrow, this market.
Of course.
It's very narrow and concentrated. And the problem is that the more diversified you are, the more diluted your returns will be. Because this is not being enjoyed by the whole market. I think down below there's still pressure on so many shares.
We've had this diversification.
The US market,
We've had this diversification chat before, haven't we? You are not anti-diversification, but you don't think it's the be-all and end-all of trading or investing, rather.
That's it. You've got to be careful about it. By careful, I mean you've got to be. It's put your eggs in one basket, put all your eggs in one, but watch them carefully. So, that's my, at the moment, I'm saying don't spread too far out. The market's strong, but know where it's strong and stay there. If you've got to jump.
Things
go wrong, but I don't think that's going to happen. But it's not easy. It's not easy to get that point across, you know, because so many people are governed by, what's the right way, and this is what the textbooks say, but this is not for textbook investing.
Yeah, investing has changed. I mean, there's certain principles haven't changed, but the way that the markets are moving, they're very fluid, they're very dynamic, and they change from year to year. There's a theme at the moment. We know what the theme is. We've talked about it ad infinitum. Until it changes, then people like yourself are going to continue to do well, I think, David. Mm. So congratulations. Now then, talking about congratulations. If you look at the Harlan Gold yesterday, at first glance you think, oh, he's just whacked it in from 7 yards. But it was very difficult. The ball was behind him. He got that huge leg of his out, left leg, bent it around that ball and got it in. It was actually a very difficult goal. I didn't like the way Manchester City paraded around the Etihad Stadium as though they'd won the league. I think that was a bit premature and a little bit disrespectful to Arsenal.
I didn't.
It's going to be a fascinating five games.
Especially Haaland without his shirt. He had a smirk on his face. you know something, Lindsay? I'm going to comment as well. I enjoy football.
Yeah.
And I like to watch teams. And I'm not, you know, everybody's got a fan base. I've got friends here who support Bolton and support Birmingham.
And Ipswich.
And Ipswich. And they enjoy it, you know, and I'm not one. The first thing today, all I got was hate mail. When I say hate mail, all the smirk. All the smirkers sending me, TikTok comments. I say, oh, leave me alone. And I'm not, it's fine. I'm not going to commit suicide if Arsenal don't win the league. You know, another season. I've been watching them for, I don't know, ever since I was born. But, you know what I mean? And the one thing that I don't like is this lack of respect as well. I think you've got 24 players on the field. 22 players on the field there. You know, they're all professionals. They all try hard. Odegaard and Haaland are now in the Norway team, you know, which I think it is. They have qualified, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
So they're going to be mates together. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're going to go across to the World Cup. I don't think they can share a bed because I don't think there's a bed big enough for Haaland. I don't know where he's going to find a place to sleep. But you know, that's the point. A lot of the chaps still meet afterwards. You know, they're all from the same country or they're still friends, whether they're playing for Chelsea or West Ham or whatever it is. And I think you should show that respect. You know, it's just something I feel very strongly about.
Okay, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that people go too far. And again, social media whips up all sorts of a frenzy of passion and vitriol, actually. Final point, David, because we've just got a few seconds left. Who's going to win the league, Arsenal or Manchester City? One word answer.
Man City. Okay. No, Man City will win it.
Okay, David Okay, I don't agree. I think Arsenal will, so we're on different sides. But David, thank you very much for your insight. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.